Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Wild Ginger Running live show / podcast if you're listening tomorrow. So it's really awesome tonight. We are here with the author of this, quite frankly, wonderful book. A work of art, if I may say so. It's Running Adventures Scotland. It's 25 inspirational runs in Scotland's wild places, written by Ross Branigan. Welcome.
Hey.
So how are you doing today, Ross? What have you been up to?
I'm not bad, thank you very much. I have been dotting around in the garden, to be honest. Not been doing a heck of a lot of running lately. Just a bit of an accident on my bike the other day, and so I'm just kind of like taking it easy.
Yeah.
It's been a bit dreich here in Kendal, so I'm just kind of enjoying the fact that, yeah, just be able to watch outside and see it drizzle down.
Yeah, oh, has it been, so it's been drizzly then. I know dreich because my sister-in-law lives in Inverness, so I know what that means. What does it mean to you?
Yeah, dreich is basically just grey and soft mizzly. It's not quite getting to the stage of drukit, which is like proper coming down.
Chucking it down.
Raining cats and dogs, you know. But dreich's kind of just like, you look at it and you go, it's a bit dreich today, isn't it? So yeah, it's been one of those days. But I did get out for a decent walk this morning, so yeah.
Yes.
Been a bit busy with work as well.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you work in conservation, don't you? Do you do at the moment?
Yeah, so I work as the engagement officer for the conservation charity, the John Muir Trust.
Oh,
so they're like a wild places charity looking after some of the more remote upland areas like Ben Nevis and Skye, some of the places actually feature in the book. I work in events, so I travel around the country doing events and supporting the teams to deliver them, like Highland Games, mountain festivals, Skyline Scotland as well, if anyone's been along to that. It's kind of it's sometimes can be like quite an amazing job because you get to meet all these amazing people who are super motivated and also just who I know personally and get to know through all the events. So yeah, it's really cool and nice to be doing something that's quite meaningful as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's a great race, isn't it, the Skyline Scotland? I've been there many a time, and I see you've done which one have you done, the Ring of Steel have you done?
Yeah.
And then haven't you got a prize of a free entry to the race for somebody who buys a book, or there's something about a prize?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, so we partnered up with the Rhea Events, who are the organizers of Skyline Scotland, like the Ring of Steel and Glencoe Skyline. And for people who were pre-ordering, there was an opportunity for you to either win an entry to the Ring of Steel. You could use it for the Ben Nevis Ultra as well, I think. That was really kind of Araya to do that, because you know it takes a lot to put these events on, and I know that they don't run on like massive margins, so it's it was really kind of them, and I hope whoever has won the event is maybe even watching this evening and is excited to do it in September, because it is an awesome race.
Will you be
really
there?
Brutal.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Will you be there yourself?
I might be there this year. Yep, I'm seeing if I can tag it on to a couple other things I've got planned. Namely, we're thinking of doing the Hebridean Way on the bikes.
Cool.
And obviously we can, I'm sort of thinking we can maybe do a bit of a pit stop over at Fort William on the way back or something. So I hope I'll be there, and at least the John Muir Trust will be there and have a stand and things, so people can go along and say hi.
Yeah, oh cool. You might even get to meet the winner of the race, of the race place.
Yeah, I would. That would be really nice, actually. So yeah, if they do come along, it'd be super cool to meet them and say hi, and then I can sign the book if they haven't got it already.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. They probably will have it because it will be pre-ordered. But that would be really cool, wouldn't it? Because you've signed my one just here.
What one did you get? I did a couple of like random little bits. Oh, you
just
got
a plain signature. Yeah. I suppose this is a pile that you didn't necessarily know who they were going to be sent to, because they're all media ones.
Well, yeah. I did. I actually, it was quite good fun, because I was, you know, I never signed anything before in my life. So I was just like, I just did the first few. So you would have got off the pile just my name. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to throw some fun stuff in here.
So get creative.
I put some Scottish phrases in. I was like, Geat Laldi, and like, get out there, and trying to be really hyped. I even numbered, I think, the first bunch. So, yeah, if you've got, I think, the first 10 or something like that, then they're numbered, and then it kind of gets a bit wacky after that. So.
Oh, I love all the Scottish phrases. I was reading the bio in the back as well, and it says he has a passion for adventures, both wee and muckle, in wild places. Yeah. So I had never heard of muckle before. It sounds wonderful. What does it mean?
Yeah, muckle just means big. It's kind of, I think it's really a word that sort of originates in Aberdeenshire. It's kind of like a bit more up in the northeast of Scotland, is muckle. I thought I would just throw the little funny words in there, and it makes it kind of unique. And with a book called Running Adventure Scotland, I try to capture some of the culture and essence of Scotland as well. It was a really exciting challenge, because I'm really passionate about the country, even though I don't live there now, but that's just personal circumstance. It was really good fun just to kind of share that passion for the culture and as well for the landscape.
Yeah, it does certainly come through, and we'll talk much more about the book in just a moment, but I just want to sort of rewind it back a little bit and ask you how you got into running yourself originally.
Yeah, so I guess running's kind of sort of been a feature of my life for a long time. Back in school, doing like just obviously PE for anyone who's been in the UK education sector, like physical education, and a lot of running and cross country and things like that. And I have to confess, I was never that good. The more like 5K stuff, it wasn't really my forte. And I kind of like went off too hard and just burst. That was kind of my first little tryout of it. But then I did lots of sports sort of growing up. I did judo for like 10 years, which is a martial art for anyone who doesn't know. And then did various things and kind of took on running again sort of, you know, like as a teenager. And at university, I went into cycling and a bit of rowing and da-da-da-da-da. And then eventually towards the end of university, I kind of came back to running again, because throughout my whole life, my main passion's been being up in the hills and just going out walking. Since I was 4 or 5, I've been out in the hills and did my first Munro, which is a summit over 3,000 feet in Scotland, when I was 9, up in Glenshee in the Cairngorms, and then since then, basically, most of my family outings were just like heading off into the hills with our caravan and touring around the country, and that's kind of how I got to know it so intimately, I guess. I sort of built up this picture in my head of the country and the places and where the hills are, and you start to, I like it because any one of my friends here, maybe from the US or elsewhere, they usually come to me saying, I'm going to be here for X number of days, what can I do? So I've kind of offered myself up as someone who can create itineraries for people if they're going to Scotland, if they want. And that just allows me to kind of use the sort of experience I've had going around the country, getting to know its landscape and obviously the best cafes and pubs and restaurants that it has to offer. That is essential knowledge.
Very important. Indeed, yeah. And that does feature in your book. You've done your research very well, I can tell there.
Yeah. So eventually, at the end of uni, it was just like, I just combined the two passions for being in the hills and stuff with running and just exploring, I guess. Running allows you to just see a little bit more. Obviously, there's a physical element to it of pushing yourself and just like, yeah, seeing how far or how fast you can go, but ultimately it's just for that sense of space and getting out there and enjoying yourself. So since then it's kind of just been dabbling in different aspects of hill running, be that racing or just more recently doing like fast packing adventures, which has kind of been more what I've turned to over the past like few years. Even though there's a ton of race numbers up behind me, I haven't actually raced for since before COVID.
Oh really? That's fine though. Sometimes you want to race and sometimes you just want to have an adventure, don't you? What do you love about running then, like and running in the mountains in particular?
I guess it's just experiencing new places and getting to see how far you can go, because obviously walking you can only travel so far, and I think there's merit to any kind of way you want to go into the hills. And I know some people who are, you know, more walkers will say, I can't, you know, runners, I don't understand them, they look at their feet all the time, and I challenge any of them to actually show me a runner who just looks at their feet all the time, because most of the time I have to be looking up. And also, you can't help it, you're in such beautiful landscapes. Part of it's just getting able to see more. And then there's like a bit of a more like groovy, hippie element to it, which I like to think of as like kind of finding your flow and finding a rhythm. And I really like the rhythm of running. It sounds, kind of like groovy, but that's just what I like. There's sort of a pace to it and you can get into this flow and it feels like you're pushing yourself, but it's manageable, and it's there's a bit of give and take with it, so that's kind of why I like it.
Like a bit of zen, like a kind of a zen feeling from it.
People find that in different ways. They can find that on the bike, they can find that walking. For me, it's often running that I get to feel that. So
I know exactly what you mean. I did a long run yesterday, like not in the mountains, nowhere particularly hilly or anything like that, but it was just so nice to do a long run again and just kind of poddle along, you know, just like jum, 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 find that rhythm, what you were talking about.
You get into a rhythm of it. And there's a reason that I'm drawn to the hills, obviously. I don't necessarily like running in the trails and stuff like that. I love running in the hills and just getting a bit like getting covered in mud and you like feel like a kid again. You're sort of like jumping over stiles and over bogs and falling over and hurting yourself. It's just part of life, isn't it?
Oh well, you're definitely starting to sell the book to me. I was flicking through the pages earlier and I was just like, oh, I wish I was on a trip to Scotland right now, because I've been to some of the places that you mentioned, and it just makes me want to go back there immediately. I just wanted to sort of link up a little bit about you're obviously really into running, you're really into the hills, but how did you get into the writing side of things? What makes that such an interesting part of your experience in the hills?
Yeah, so for me, writing has just been around probably as long as being in the hills has been, to be honest. I mean, when I was younger, I started and wrote a whole tons of stories and was always imagining stuff and writing fiction and random bits and bobs. And then through university, I studied journalism and politics, and that was, I went and I was in the student newspaper there. I was a writer throughout, writing for news, politics. I worked for the BBC for a bit. I became an editor-in-chief of the newspaper and managed all our editorial output. And that was really cool and wrote hundreds of articles. And all the while through uni, kept a political blog. It was good fun and kept me busy and opened up a lot of things for me. And then that just kind of morphed once I went into work and thought, well, I really love being in the hills and running and stuff like that. I'm just going to combine my love of writing with that of running in the landscape. And actually, my postgrad diploma was a lot of it focused on Nan Shepherd. if anyone's heard of Nan Shepherd before.
I've seen her on your blog, and I'm sure I've heard of her as well. Just remind us all who she is.
Yeah, Nan Shepherd was a writer in sort of like the 20th century from the Cairngorms, and she really was quite unique in that she was a woman writing about being outdoors and climbing mountains, which was really like sort of pushing the boundaries at that time. And as well, she was also a sort of like prolific like writer in Scots language, like in Doric. So she has The Living Mountain is her like main non-fiction book, but then she also has like I think three, maybe four works of fiction, and they're all like in Scots. So reading them can be quite challenging, but it gives you a sense of the people and the culture that she's writing about and that she grew up with.
Oh, wow.
Which is really interesting, and loads of poetry. She's just wonderful, and she captures that like Zen thing a lot, and a lot about embodiment and spirituality in the landscape. So I really recommend anyone to, I mean, The Living Mountain is such a, I don't know if I've got a copy of it here, but it's a really thin little book. It's like 100 pages or something like that, and it goes through different aspects of her journey through the Cairngorms. So yeah,
make a note.
There you go. Yeah, so reading her stuff made me just have opened my eyes to like a new type of writing about the outdoors. And just since then, I've just been like writing loads of articles on my blog. It's now rossrunswild.com. You can find stuff about my adventures there, my races, and other random bits and bobs that I like to throw up there from time to time.
It's awesome, and you can definitely tell that you're a writer from the writing style of the book. It's really nicely written. I mean, it's just really easy to read. I mean, it's not just, there is lots of directions, obviously, but there's a really lovely intro to each bit. I'll just show everybody. There's a bookmark in here for the Western Highlands, so it sort of starts off with, there's several in, they divide Scotland, obviously, into the different parts, and so this is the Western Highlands area. I'll just show people what they would get if they were to purchase this book. I really like the way that you've got little quotes from kind of fell runners or influential people in the outdoors and in Scotland, to have a little quote about the mountain that you've chosen and the route that you've chosen. And then there's a nice little gradient profile here. I don't know if that looks a bit brutal, doesn't it? All the way down, then all the way up again. Oh yeah, that would be the Glen. Is that the Glencoe Skyline route?
It kind of goes around the bottom of Buachaia to Moher. It's a low level trail route, but it kind of, you do cross over the Glencoe Skyline route quite a bit. So it does, it gives you a chance to actually follow some of it if you really wanted
to.
It's the option to take a little turn and go up somewhere different if you wanted to, and go somewhere a little bit more up, higher up.
Yeah, it's really cool, and the mapping's really awesome as well. The mapping's 3D, so that's really pro, isn't it? I like that mapping. And then you've got tons of pictures throughout to inspire you. I mean, if you weren't inspired to start with just picking up the book, you'd be super inspired with all the pictures. There's some lovely directions as well, and then points of interest, and then all the highlights, getting there, top tips. Other options, and like and what you were talking about before about the pub or the cafe, and tips on how to find out more, and just like little things like this little sign that you've got here, which has got loads of other little stickers attached to it, just the little things that you pick up on the way,
curios
that really make you feel like you've definitely been there and you've definitely run all of these routes. We do have an audience member question about the routes, actually. I think she's actually watching, Andrea, who says, hello Claire and Ross. I think she's watching right now. I hope she is, because we're going to answer your question now, Andrea. She says she's always interested in the process of choosing which routes to include. So there's obviously only 25 in here, and Scotland's a very big country. Can you take us through a little bit of the process of choosing the routes?
Yeah, so naturally you're going to miss some out, and there were some which I look back and go like, oh, maybe I could have gone there. And actually, since I've been since the book came out and I've gotten around Scotland, I've been like, no, I was justified in not putting that in because it didn't make sense in the scope of the rest of the routes that kind of ended up making it. So I had to, yeah, there was a couple of essential criteria that they had to meet first, which is, firstly, is it a route that's just loved by the Scottish Hillrunning community? Those are people who I hang out with and who I follow on social media, and I just know that route is great. Like, one of which is like Benaglow, which is in the Cairngorms, and that's just a route that I know people go back to time and time again because it's just great fun running. So that was first. Second was, is it part of a race route? Perhaps. So a good one's the Pentland Skyline outside of Edinburgh, really iconic long distance Scottish hill running route. So that made it in along with a couple others. Third, does it have a place in Scottish hill running history? So that could be like the South Glen Shield Ridge, which featured in John Broxap's Munro record round back in 1988, I think. So that was kind of like something I wanted to be able to tell the story of. So kind of all of the routes have a story to tell. Yeah, the one that hit one of those like three essential criteria. And then after that, it was like, it then started to look a bit more broadly and think, right, where are maybe there's some gaps? Where do I need to test some out? And that was a little bit more of a tricky bit, because then it was about going out, recceing places I'd never been before, testing things, maybe getting them wrong. Some of them didn't turn out as good as I had hoped. You know, and it was a process of elimination, and there was a long list of Fiverr. And you know, obviously the publisher kind of like gives you some guidance and says we want between like, you know, 25 to 28 sort of maximum. But yeah, once I started like building up what ones were in there, I was like, well, it doesn't make sense to have this one anymore because it doesn't fit the sort of the ethos of what I was trying to get across, which was like running adventure in Scotland. It was kind of a bit more of that bigger landscape, wild places, getting out there in the mountains. It's a book which I tried to cater for a lot of different abilities. You know, like that route you just showed in Glencoe, the two Larrigs, that is like a low level trail route, but it's still in the mountains. You know, when I think, where would people want to go when they come to visit Scotland? And I go like, right, okay, they're going to go to the West Highlands, they're going to go to the Cairngorms, they're going to go to the Northwest, da 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 da. There are some places which I kind of like included because they have close like place in my heart, like in the Ochils especially, which is where I grew up, and my home hills, and still like I think they're wonderful hills, so they kind of sneaked in there.
They are amazing.
Yeah, they're lovely hills. They're not like iconic, but they have some fantastic hill races on them. So yeah, it was really hard, and I get people going like, there's tons of room for like a second book.
Yeah, I'm like, that's what I was just about to say.
Yeah, I'm like, there is a lot of room for a second book, but it would be a different book, you know. I wouldn't like, it's kind of like, yeah, there's an algorithm to it in my head. Uh-huh. That just like, some of them you had a gun just doesn't rest. So that you had to kind of tell a story with each of them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there was a mix, and you had to make sure that you were doing stuff that catered for a wide range of people, and you weren't like, you know, favoring one type of route versus another, and you kind of peppered it geographically a little bit more. Fairly.
I can just imagine you with on the kitchen table with like a big map of Scotland printed out and like little pinpoints and moving them around and like stirring the pot.
Yeah, pretty close. And every so often you would be like, oh, we haven't been there yet. Like, we went for a run in the borders just outside of Peebles. And one of the routes I wanted to try out was the Glen Sachs Horseshoe, I think it was. And I'd seen it on the map, and I knew the first part of it was really lovely. And in fact, at the back of the book, there is a little bit that's like an appendix, and it says it's More Like This, it's called. And at the back of the book, yeah, you'll find there's the More Like This section, and then in the central southern Scotland, there's the Gypsy Glen, which is a really popular like trail running route. It's just at the back here. And there's a really popular trail, and that's where this Glen Sachs Horseshoe started. It was on sort of like the trail that takes you down the Gypsy Glen. But once we got to the far end of the horseshoe and started coming back, we just came across this mighty bog. And it was like, oh, it was so, it was peat hags, like big steep-sided peat bog, and wet and slushy and not a lot of fun. And the descent back into the glen was great, but it kind of made me go, I enjoyed that. Like, I like going through bogs and muddy and stuff like that, but then I was kind of like, would everyone appreciate me saying, oh, this route's great, off you go, and then they get, like, proper muddy as anything.
Yeah,
and I guess, like, to the last point I'd make is there was a bit of a, like, visitor pressure consideration to be made as well.
I was going to say, because I know a lot of the Scottish runners, the old school foul runners in particular, they wouldn't want you to sort of release all the secret gems. So I thought it was quite canny of you to sort of stick to the best loved, as in the most well-known ones, because they wouldn't mind you sharing those things. But you kind of want to keep a few little secrets, don't you?
Yeah, it wasn't about, like, picking the ones that are super popular. Like, I wasn't going to include Ben Nevis, because Ben Nevis has got so many roof books written about it. You can find how to run up Ben Nevis wherever you want. It's fairly straightforward. But there was, like, a fine balance of finding what I would describe those, that Ben Nevis level of stuff was, like, tier one. They're, like, tier one notoriety. Everyone knows Ben Nevis. Then there was the tier two lot, which are known but not, like, super duper popular, and but they're well known to, like, Scottish Hill runners. So I was like, I'll go with them. And then there's the ones which are just, like, the hidden gems, which will, you'll just have to find out yourself for.
Yeah, well, that's why I like, I didn't notice actually the more like this section. I think that's just really nice because, I mean, people might want to tick off all 25 of these routes, mightn't they? Or at least a fair few of them. And then if they really particularly liked a certain area, then they've got a few more to try out. And then they can, you know, try making their own route up and a bit less hand-holding.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I mean, actually, I'm going to shout him out because he might even be watching. There's a guy called Johnny Logan who on Twitter has been sending me loads of pictures from his routes that he's been doing, and he's been basically touring around the country with this book. Cool. It's been the coolest thing. I'm like, that is exactly what I wanted someone to do, because basically most of the routes in this book were done on trips, probably like Johnny's doing. I mean, the Cairngorms, I think, like, in the Cairngorms section there's one, two, three, four that we did on a holiday, like, just one after the other. Because it makes logical sense. If you're on holiday going to the Cairngorms, you'll start in Aviemore probably and work your way around to Braemar, and then you go back south again.
Yeah.
So I made it with that in mind to try and keep it logical for people who are going away and they're like, oh, we want to do a few of them. I tell you what, I chewed my partner's ear off talking about this constantly on every run we did.
Oh, I bet she loved it.
Well, yeah, I'm sure she did. But I had such consternation about it that I really wanted to make it do it right. Anyway, that answers the question very long-windedly.
Yeah, no, that's great. And Andrea is actually listening right now, and she says, thank you, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's good.
And I just want to read you out something from Marco, who's listening all the way from Colombia. He says, Claire, you and your guests are awesome. Thank you. So thank you, Marco, for listening. Yeah, that's awesome. So with that in mind, was the book hard to write? Like, did it sort of flow? You seemed like once you'd chosen the mountains and the routes to go on, it just sort of all came together. Did it come together really easily?
Kind of does, yeah. It's funny. People say this about writing a book, and they say, like, well, one day I just, like, you know, finish a chapter and suddenly I had a book. Because it's kind of like that. You're working in little sections all the time, and, you know, every route's about 1500 words or something like that.
It's quite structured, isn't it, writing a route book? You've got to complete certain things and you just kind of crack on with it, don't you?
There's a formula to it, but there was actually, I was really surprised by how much freedom Vertebrate Publishing gave me with it, because there's a few bits that I was like, I think this is valuable. Like, there's the bog rating for each of the bits, like how boggy it is, and and those cafes and which conservation charity to support and yada yada. And so they kept all that in, which was really nice. And those were my own little bits. But yeah, you kind of write a 1500 word route and you've got it down, and then you move on to the next one, the next one, the next one. And then after, like, you know, 8 months or so, you've got 50,000 words in a folder. And it's just like, I don't know how that happened.
Yeah.
It's quite a surreal experience. I mean, yeah, you've done your own. So it's just this, yeah, really bizarre sort of anti-climax, I get.
Yeah, it just...
And I keep going, like, how many more? It's never finished.
Yeah, it just kind of keeps going, doesn't it? And then, I don't know about you, but when I wrote mine, I ended up with far too many words. So I had to then just go and, like, hack everything out and just be, like, really cruel, like, oh, I don't need that bit. But that took me ages to craft. Oh, no, I don't need that bit. I'll just delete that bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It was, I think I'd see a lot of people who work in kind of, like, doing more, like, not guidebooks, have to work a lot on the editing side of things, because there is that limitation and there's a narrative that you have to stick to and kind of make it quite sharp. Whether it was because I just wrote good stuff to go in with, it seemed that the edits weren't huge, which was really comforting for me. And it, because there was obviously a few iterations of a couple of routes, like I sent a few over to Kirsty Reed, the commissioning editor of Vertebrate, and it was like, does this tone work? Or do you want this tone or this tone? And she sent back, like, is it okay if we get a mix? So I was like, all right, okay, because they were not wanting it to be like a blow-by-blow account. But there was also, like, don't be too broad, basically.
Yeah.
So you had to kind of tease that in a little bit, which was a good challenge. So, yeah, the book ends up just kind of, like, happening once you've kind of got that base level of research done. It's just like ticking it over, and it took about I think I got the commission in like December to write it, and I finished it in October.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not long at all, especially
like
if you had to go and run. Did you have to go and run them all within that time frame, or had you already really familiar with a few of them?
Yeah, so a few of them I was really familiar with. There are a few which people might notice, like Ben Aglow, for instance, and Ben Lomond. The photographs are not mine because I knew the routes so well that I could just do them off of memory, to be honest. It was kind of like I know exactly where to go.
Yeah.
It was like going up to Scotland to go and do Ben Lomond alone at times was a little bit like I didn't work with my schedule and so on, so I was kind of like, well, I knew it by heart and I knew people locally who had good photographs, and thanks to the guys at Walk Highlands for contributing some of the photography because that was really helpful. But yeah, most of them you'll find, if it doesn't have a credit under it, it's probably taken by me. And that is about like 20 of the 25 routes, so yeah, in that time. Despite injury, COVID, crazy winter in Scotland, which meant that I couldn't go running in the Cairngorms for the best part of until June, really. It was kind of like this 4 months of just. I was just in Scotland every single weekend.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was quite. It was working to the lines at times.
Yeah. No, it sounds like a labour of love, but a really good labour of love. I was also really interested to talk to you about the environmental message that you wanted to come across through the book.
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about that? Because obviously you work in conservation. It totally makes sense.
Yeah. So I think just since like lockdown kind of ended, I guess, we saw this massive influx of people going to the hills for the first time, which was really exciting because, yeah, people who would regularly go to Ibiza were now going up Ben Nevis and finding out just how awesome it is to go outside, which is great. I really love that. But there were some problems with it, like, you know, some issues around overcrowding, bad parking, you know, just footpath maintenance costs go up for charities like mine and National Trust for Scotland and RSPB and so on. So, you know, that increase in numbers obviously has an effect. And for me, I was very conscious that I was sending people to places that I really love and that are quite fragile in some cases. I'll use Ben Lawrs as an example. Like, it's a national nature reserve. It's got very rare Arctic alpine plants. that, you know, they're more of in the enclosure, but there are other routes in the book that do have like quite rare flora that if you stepped on you would cause like, you know, quite a lot of damage to. And so, yeah, and obviously we're living through a climate and biodiversity crisis at the moment, and so for me, having a message in there of like how to go responsibly into the outdoors, obviously crack on, enjoy it, it's awesome, like you'll love being out there, but there's a consideration to be made. And I know as runners we love running through bogs and heather and all that, but if you can try and stick to the main routes, and particularly those I write in the book, you know, there's like, I give as much information as I possibly can to allow you to do it safely and responsibly. And then, yeah, at the end of most of the routes, there is a charity that you can support by like dropping a donation to them or something like that, or just going online to find more. You know, like there's the National Trust for Scotland's in there, the John Muir Trust, RSPB, and there's a couple of local ones as well, like Sylvan features in this book, which people might recognise as the big humpback whale. I'll show it there because everyone probably... There it is.
That is a great picture.
So yeah, it's a beautiful mountain, and it's the Ascent Foundation sort of like manage the land in the area and do a lot of work restoring footpaths and so on. So for me it was really important that if you go to these places you should go respectfully, and also you should think about how you can give back as well. So that was really big for me.
Yeah, it's really big deal, isn't it? Now, like, I've actually started doing just like a monthly donation to REN. I don't know if you've heard of them. I interviewed Jim Mann on the channel before COVID, I think it was, about Trees Not Teas, the company that they founded for swapping race t-shirts with t-shirts. I'm sure you know, swapping race t-shirts with trees, which I'm sure you know all about. I just like felt super guilty, because in this job, which I do, like, I've flown all over the world trail running, and you know, I've written about all these mountains. Oh, you got the sun in your eye. Yeah, it's getting dark, isn't it? It's such a difficult thing, because you want to go to these amazing places and you want to encourage other people to go to the amazing places, but what do you do about like tracking your carbon footprint? So I just thought, well, I'll take as little planes as I can, I'll go on trains and boats whenever I can, like to the Isle of Man, but I just do a monthly donation as well, just to help. Is that something that you would recommend, or like does the book recommend doing that as well? How do you reconcile it with yourself?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think actually Damien Hall has a really good perspective on this, and he says that he's a really good
eco runner, isn't he?
Yeah, we're all kind of hypocrites at the end of the day. Because we all do stuff that, you know, we could make more eco-conscious decisions. I like, for myself, you know, I've not really done a lot of foreign travel in my life, because I've spent a lot of my time in Scotland, and this is the product of it.
But you're okay recently, then.
But just recently I've kind of really wanted to see more of the world, and because I'm not, you know, I don't have tons of money, and unfortunately we're in a position where public transport is so, and I'm speaking for myself when I'm talking about all this, but you know, public transport's still really expensive, and it shouldn't be, but unfortunately whenever I'm like, I really want to go and experience a new place, and I've done Scotland so much, and I want to experience different cultures and so on, a £90 plane flight, or you look at a £300 train.
Yeah, and that takes 3 days.
I don't have all that. Yeah, you don't have all that much annual leave. You know, you don't have the money to just like splash on that. So you just go, you know, that's a decision you kind of make. And you reconcile that by thinking about all the other things you do in your life. Like, I eat less meat nowadays. I drive a lot less. I work from home. So yeah, it's kind of like driving isn't really a big thing. I buy less, and yeah, you just gotta kind of do things that you think are responsible. And ultimately as well, we get into the mindset because we're people who are conscious about these things, we think like, oh, I'm doing such a terrible thing. I've flown once this year. Oh, yeah. But you have to remember that there are people flying weekly.
Yeah, to like America. Like,
yeah, constant long-haul
like,
flights.
Yeah.
So you should not beat yourself up. The thing, the best thing you can do is care. And if you care a little bit, then you will start to make small changes. And, you know, I've been out and probably planted throughout my time working in conservation like 1,000 trees or whatever, and so yeah, it's just one of those things that you do what you can, and yeah. You just got to care a little bit more.
Yeah, I think as runners we're probably already doing more than a lot of people, so that is good.
Exactly.
But there's obviously always more that we can do. And did you pick up every bit of litter on the way like Damien likes to do?
Yeah, I actually do often do
yeah.
that. Yeah. I'm often picking banana skins up. Because I have a dog, I always have poo bags in my rucksack. So I banana skins and Satsuma peels. Interesting fact about banana skins, people think that the reason you shouldn't throw them away is because they just don't degrade that quickly.
Mm.
It's true, but it's also because where bananas come from, they're areas of really high nutrient soils.
Mm.
Whereas in the UK, we have really low nutrients. So on the mountains in particular, we have really low nutrient density in our soils. And if you do drop a banana, it essentially, as it decays, will release all those nutrients and burn the soil and burn the plants that are in the vicinity of
it.
Oh,
God. Wow.
So you can really damage fragile plants if you're chucking banana skins all over the place.
Yeah.
So top tip.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I would hope that nobody listening to this show or podcast would ever drop a banana skin on purpose. But that will give us more impetus to go pick it up,
yeah,
won't
take
it? Yeah.
Yeah, take it back.
Yeah, take it back home with us, put it in your pocket.
Yeah.
I used to pick up a lot more litter before COVID. I think I'm going to start now again because I think the scare has gradually diminished. So I think we can all start safely picking up litter again. Cool. Well, I've just got we've got time for a couple more questions. I hope you're okay just for a couple more questions.
Yeah.
For us. I don't want to ask you this question even because I know it's going to be a really difficult one, but do you have a favorite route? I know it's like trying to choose between your children, but I've got to ask, have you got a favorite of all these 25 routes in this wonderful book, Running Adventure Scotland?
Yes, so obviously all of the routes have a special story to them. And yeah, we'll maybe talk about that, but like I think for me the South Glacial Ridge just hits the nail on the head every time. With about like 1300 meters of ascent in it, so you know, distance to elevation is actually like pretty reasonable. But in that 27 kilometers you're climbing 7 Munros. You're basically tripping over Munro summits as you're running along this ridge. And the ridge is really nice, wide ridge, rolling terrain, very grassy. There's a steep section to get up onto the ridge, but after that, you've just got like sublime views in all directions, if you can see them, obviously. We got a really good day for it. Yeah, so you get like some Munros, you get from whichever point you want to go, and yeah, drop back down. And the way we recommend in the book to do it is to finish at the Clooney Inn, because that's then, if you've left the car and you've got a bike at the Clooney Inn, you can then go downhill all the way back to your car.
Cool.
So
good tip. I like that.
Easier for you, yeah. So if you go from west to east, you get a downhill bike ride back to the start.
Brilliant.
And yeah. Whichever one of the friends has to go and get the car, the other one can sit in the Clooney Inn and have a beer. So.
And have a lovely beer.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds ideal.
Tremendous. Really
good. Oh, I love that one. And you've got a story as well, haven't you? I've just remembered you wanted to talk about the Sky route that you did, the Skirnestry, which was a really challenging day out. Intriguing.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was a really challenging day out because I think, like I say, all those routes have a story in them, why they're in there, what happens, and so on. But Skirnestry was really interesting for me because it was kind of like I'd actually been working at Skyline Scotland. Time ever going to get up to Skye so easily is from Fort William.
Mm.
So I decided to head over to Skye. I slept in a lay-by in the van and then headed over to Skye the next morning. And it was, I mean, like, yeah, I said dreich at the start of this conversation. It was dreich. Like, it was
super dreich.
super Drake. It wasn't quite Drake, but it was proper Drake. And yeah, Sky was earning its reputation as the Misty Isle that day, I have to say. So I sat in the co-op car park in Caill Ba Chailc and just like was pounding like a pan of triple lines in my mouth and was like, oh, this is going to be so miserable because I'm by myself.
Oh.
And I thought, well, I just got to crack on. This is my only opportunity to do this. And so I headed off to Kilmarie and headed down to Camasunary and just like, I had this total black dog on my back for a while. It was proper like grumpy, but then just something happened when I got over that brow and could see over Camasunary Bay. I was like, wow, this is a wild place. Like, this is just so out the way. I feel like the last person on earth. It's so wicked. And yeah, then I ran off and crossed over the river, and then the rain came down like nobody's business, and then it was proper Drukit then, and my only like company was this red deer, and so it was just an amazing moment because I'm kind of like, I had to check myself. I was thinking, right, you know, am I safe? You know, this is one of those ones where you're like, it's cold, it's really raining hard, and then I was like, well, I'm on the route, I've got a map, I've got a compass, I'm sure of myself in the mountains, I've got enough, like, you know, food and clothing to keep me safe, so I'm going to crack on and see how I get on. And the clouds lifted just as I got to the summit, and I got the, like, iconic view over Lough Corruisk and the Coolin that everybody kind of, like, goes up Skirness 3 to see, and I was like, yes,
yay,
that was it. And then I came back on the Sky Trail and just like, I could leave, and I was like, that was awesome. Like, it started off so hard, but just a little bit of perseverance, and just, yeah, one of those things, you give something a crack and it works out in the end. So yeah, that's a really memorable day, and I have loads of memorable days from the book, but it was a real joy to explore and find new places. Skirness Strait I'd never been up before, so that was a really cool thing to do. So I loved it.
Yeah, it's awesome, and the love of the area just really comes across in the book. I was really taken by just the lovely language that you used to describe the places, or the people you've spoken to get like little insights into the areas, or the little top tips. It really is a wonderful book, Ross. I hope that you're very proud of what you've created and excited.
It's quite weird seeing you there with it.
Yeah, with the
book. Here as well.
Yeah,
I'm like,
it's like,
you've
what?
Got my book.
You've
how
got
did
the
you
book.
Get hold of that? Eh?
How did we do that? Yeah. So I've just got one final question for you.
Oh, yeah.
On your blog, there's a drop down menu, there's a few things along the top, and there's a drop down menu, and the book one says books plural. So what's next? What's the next book? You're already setting yourself up for a second, haven't you?
Gosh, yeah. I think I call it that because we're going to do some reviews as well, so it might be that I amend it slightly. But yeah, at the moment I've got a lot of really exciting projects on.
Anything you can tell us about?
Oh yeah, actually, so at the end of July, this is like, yeah, runners may not know about this race, but there's a race called the Transcontinental, which is a self-supported bikepacking ultra endurance race that goes from basically crosses the European continent. Goes from Belgium this year to Bulgaria.
Cool.
And I'm going to be the race reporter for the event, so I'll be writing race reports every day. I've been doing interviews for some pre-race interviews to get some articles up. So I'll be away on the road from 22nd of July to the 9th of August.
Is that time off from your job at the John Muir then?
Yeah, so I'm taking leave and just heading off and doing some writing, journalism. It's going to be like frontline journalism on the day, in the back of a car, typing away, doing interviews and so on. So it's going to be a really cool experience.
Yeah, it's hard work doing that day after day.
Done that
a lot back in the day.
Yeah, that's taking up my
headspace. Take a lot of jelly babies and caffeine.
Caffeine, jelly babies, stopping off it.
But you're good and young, you'll be fine.
Stopping for gas stations, getting to know the insides of a petrol station in Romania.
Sure. Yeah, it would be really cool. Such an amazing way to travel and see the country. And yeah, you'll just be like hopping in, hopping out, seeing all these cool people cycling past. That would be a really awesome experience.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm psyched for that, and that's not far away. So got that in the pipeline. And then there's a couple of stuff with this book still. You know, I've got events in mid-July and then September, so I'll be in a couple of Alp Kit stores.
Cool.
So people keep their eye out. I'll be in Keswick and in Edinburgh. Dates will be available pretty soon, I think. And yeah, that's kind of everything that's going on. It's going to be a busy time over the next 4 weeks, I think. And then back we'll be like, ooh.
And Christmas.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, so, book for Christmas. Everybody is... quite big for a stocking, but we can always fold it like this.
Yeah, and you can download all the GPX files as well.
Now that is very handy.
you can give it over as a digital device.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, Andrea says, it seems you guys have just convinced me to order Ross's book. And Saragon McEnny says, the Isle of Skye trail running sounds amazing. Is it in your book, Ross? I'm guessing it is, because that's why we were talking about it.
Yeah. So there's Skurness 3, which is one of the routes on Skye, but then actually I think I give an honourable mention to the Skye trail. Let me just check. I shifted it out. It might have been on my like long list at one point.
That's a sneak secret preview for the podcast.
There it is. It's in the multi-day routes. So at the back, we've got a couple more multi-day routes, and one of them is the Skye Trail. So
cool.
Once it's given that a crack, then do so, because it is beautiful. And having ran, I did the Trotternish Ridge Race back in 2017, I think this is one of the numbers up there is from Trotternish Race, and that was just bonkers. It was a crazy race. The weather was really atrocious. I couldn't see much further than, like, you know, 20 meters ahead of you, and Trotternish is the top bit of sky. It's kind of that whole area.
Wow.
And it's like this big scar that runs down that that central section of sky. And I remember the race organizer saying, you need to, if you're not comfortable navigating, then don't think that you can use the ridge as a handrail, because you won't be able to see it. So you can see it now. If you're not comfortable, then you don't have to run this. And I just looked at my plate and I was like, I guess we're just doing this.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a long day out. I got lost a couple of times, but so did everybody.
Wow. It's nice, isn't it, that they've still got races where they can fling you off into the wilderness like that. And it's your own fault whether you survive or not.
Within reason, yeah.
Yep. Awesome. Oh, well, thanks so much, Ross. It really has been really lovely to talk to you tonight. And I think we've definitely sold a few more copies of Running Adventures Scotland, so that's fantastic.
If people want to get it, then just go to, I think it's adventurebooks.com. Which is Vertebrate Publishing's website, or you can just type it into Google and you'll be able to find it, I'm sure. And it's
I'll
in
put
most
a link
of
in the
Scottish
description
books
below as well.
So grab yourself a copy, get inspired, and come up with some routes of your own. I'd love to see people's photographs. You can find me on Twitter, Ross Brannigan 95, or Instagram, which is Ross Runs Wild, and I'd love to see your photographs of you using the book, because we're wicked.
Cool. Oh, and just remind us about the blog as well. What's the web address for that?
Yeah, rossrunswild.com.
Rossrunswild.com.
That's the place to go. I'm currently writing up a fast packing trip report from when I was in France just recently. I went to the Jura Alps and did a few days in Jura, which was really cool. So I'm currently writing something about that.
Wow, it's really inspiring, and just carry on having these amazing adventures, and we look forward to hearing more from you and getting the book as well. I'm hoping that everybody will go away with a copy of this book now as well.
Magic. Thanks so much. Yeah, it's been really great to chat about it and relive some of it as well, which is really nice. So I hope people enjoy the book, and look forward to seeing photos from it.
Cool. Okay, we'll share your posts, everyone, and hopefully you'll see some people on the trails then. Night, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.